Hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Michigan Golf Podcast. Thanks for tuning back in. Garrett Smith here, and I'm going to keep this intro brief as we have a little bit of a longer, extra special episode for you guys. We've got our recurring guest on the pod, Paul, who's back for another episode with us, as well as a new guest for you guys named Derek. And we're going to kind of transcend the game of golf and do a bit of a multi-sport podcast for this episode. Derek's a big NASCAR fan and not an avid golfer in any respect. So he's got some great golf questions on tap for us. He's going to be asking Paul and I, and we're going to be giving him some feedback on the game of golf, and I'm sure he's probably going to try and sell us on becoming NASCAR fans. So anyway, let's jump to a quick ad, and when you get back, we've got some good fun in store for you guys. So hang tight. All right, guys, welcome back. As promised, as I kind of mentioned in the previous pod, we have an extra special episode today. And you guys have all gotten to know Paul a little bit. He's been on a couple episodes with me now. But we have a new extra special guest. And I've mentioned him. I dropped his name in a previous podcast. I'm not sure if he's listened to it yet. But his name's Derek. He works with Paul and I here. So good friend, good coworker. And he is going to be bringing some unique content today. He's not a golfer. He is a NASCAR fan.
That's right.
And so he's got, well, what do you got, Derek? It's 5, 6, 7 questions.
Yeah, a handful.
I think his list is a little longer than we prefer, but we'll start with 5 today. Let's start with 5 questions from a NASCAR fan for golfers. So before we dip into that, Derek, let's hear a little bit of background on you. What's your experience in the game of golf like?
Pretty minimal, to put it short. Don't really know a whole lot other than you hit a ball with a club, and there's probably a lot of strategy beyond that. But drawn on my background, there was many years ago I worked, I did a little bit of work in the radio industry, and I always found this was, 10, 12 years ago. I always found it really interesting when you would meet the guys behind the microphone, because you'd hear them all day long and you always wondered what they looked like. So just so you guys see a little bit of a visualization, I'm sure you've seen Garrett from his social media pages, but if you're trying to envision me right now, you probably can think of like a NASCAR jumpsuit of some sort. But to tie this whole thing to golf, I've been told that I look like Vijay Singh as well as Vince Vaughn. So if you can take Vince Vaughn and Vijay Singh and put them in a NASCAR jumpsuit, that's me. So if you haven't seen Paul yet, all I can think of really is...
Oh, I'm getting a description now too?
A little bit of Matt Damon. Okay. Just a little Matt Damon. Okay. And Garrett's one of a kind. I'm sure you've seen him on the social media. But a little bit of Paul Walker maybe. I've heard that from a handful of people. But yeah, Vijay Singh, Vince Vaughn kind of merged into one with a NASCAR jumpsuit. That's me. So either way, hopefully that helps you guys.
So from a NASCAR standpoint, I mean, you're just trying to tie us to... race car drivers, I can be the Fast and the Furious, and Paul made an appearance in Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah.
So that was a good movie, but
that works.
We don't all drive cars here, Derek. So Paul and I swing the golf clubs.
I know. There's a little subtle challenge I have for all the people listening that NASCAR is a sport. It's not just people driving back and forth. So, but I realize this is mostly a golf theme, so I'll kind of leave it at that with NASCAR. But there are similarities to in all sports in terms of competitive edge and wanting to win. I think one of the things that isn't understood in NASCAR that also isn't fully understood in golf is just the team aspect. Obviously, with racing, there's a pit crew and there's strategy and there's a crew chief and a driver, but most people just know the driver. So in the world of golf, you've got the golfer, you've got the caddy. Talk to me a little bit about what people don't see in the sport of golf, whether it be from like a coach standpoint or practice and more of a team effort, is there even much of a team effort? So to help me kind of understand that side of it.
Yeah, definitely. So before I get to that, first of all, we've heard a lot about your past work experience, and I had no idea that you dipped your toes in the radio industry before. What's that about?
Yeah, I was that guy back in, boy, 2004 and 5 probably. I would be the guy that set up the remote broadcasts for some local radio stations here in West Michigan. So You'd hear the DJ say, "We're broadcasting live at this dealership or this McDonald's or this family fair." Yeah. I was the guy that went and hooked up all the equipment. And this was before smartphones, so this was, again, 2004. I was the guy that found the modem, hooked everything up. There was this tall, like 40, 50-foot tower that we would assemble and that would broadcast to downtown Grand Rapids. So I was the guy that kind of set that up, and it was pretty time-bound, and it got a little stressful here and there, but I was one that set that up. So I also helped with, like, promotions and things of that nature. Did that about a year and a half. It was a good little side hustle before side hustles were a thing. It was working closely with the on-air talent. And now we've got social media, so if you listen to them, you can probably find out what they look like. But, again, Vijay Singh, Vince Vaughn. That's me.
That's cool, man. I had no idea. So like I said, we've learned a lot about your previous work experience, but that was one that you've left off the resume for a
while. That's
right.
So
that's cool. What was your golf question again? No, I forget now.
It was mostly about just the team aspect of golf. I mean, again, everybody knows who the golfer is. They possibly know the caddy. There's usually a coach involved, I would assume. But what else is there behind the scenes that people just don't realize that is there even a team aspect to golf?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what do you think, Paul? I mean, I think our experiences as far as team orientation in the game of golf right now is a little bit different. But what's it look like for you?
For me, not being as competitive in golf as I used to be, there's not a huge team aspect for me. I would say back in the day there was, like, if, you know, when I was in high school and a little bit of college, I mean, my dad was who helped me kind of with my swing. If things were going a little bit left or a little bit right, he was the guy who was always there to help me, you know, try and straighten things out a little bit. And a lot of the times it's people that I play golf with on a regular basis. They notice different things in your swing, especially if they play with you quite often. They can notice, say, hey, your tempo's getting a little quick, or how come your swing's a little flat, whatever some of the nuances might be. So from my experience, it's more friendly, like people, like family-ish.
Gotcha.
I would say, like, on tour, though, it's getting really interesting because their teams are getting bigger and bigger, whether it's, you know, your psychologist, your physical therapist, you know, whoever's going to...
Nutrition,
workouts, all that stuff. Caddy, obviously, is very important. And then also your family, too. I mean, I think that's an invaluable thing for even myself golfing, and I'm sure for pros too. Like, if things are good at home, that helps out a lot.
Yeah.
You need to have a clear mind, because what's the saying about golf's played basically between the ears? Yeah. That's where it's played. You can have, you know, a lot of good physical attributes, but if you don't have the right brain, then it's not going to help out.
Yeah. Or if it's a mess. Yeah.
It's kind of my synopsis of it.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I think on tour, Derek, on the professional level, Paul kind of hit the nail on the head there. There's a lot more involvement kind of with outside resources, like either a fitness or nutrition coach, or caddies are important and stuff. But honestly, I mean, that's kind of the cool thing about golf, and that's what drew me to the game, was the fact that it's not a team sport. I used to play basketball back when I was young in middle school, and then if you can call middle school basketball playing basketball, but that's a whole nother story. But I liked golf and got into golf primarily because everything depended upon me. I didn't have to rely on anybody else to make the game winning shot, or in golf, make the winning putt. And if I played poorly, it was on me. It wasn't on anybody else that was on my team. So I kind of enjoy that aspect of the game. And so, but over time, I mean, I embraced that through high school and through college, of course, in that competitive arena. You don't have caddies, and you don't have, I mean, I worked with a swing coach in high school and college, but you don't have all those resources. But nowadays, I do a little bit. I do have a swing coach that I work with, and then who also has connected me with somebody in kind of the physio world that's given me kind of strength and mobility training exercises to keep loose and limber and do the right things for my body. And that is all beneficial. As far as caddies go in the competitions that I play, I don't have a caddy. I did for a bit. A couple years ago, I had one guy who was awesome. I loved having him on the bag, and he was there every event I played a couple summers ago. But since then, I just kind of, some of the events I play on weekdays, and so I'm taking time off work to play them, and it's hard for me to ask the same person to take that same time off.
Right.
So a lot of times I'll just get my wife on the bag. she joins me. Otherwise, if I've got a buddy that wants to come out and just hang out for a few hours on the weekend, and most of the, I always give them a little grief because people want to, they don't want to carry clubs. And so thankfully I have a push cart and I let people take a push cart. But then I've got buddies that they think they're, they don't want to push it around. They want to put it on their back and carry it. And I'm cool with that
too. Old fashioned way.
So there's definitely a team aspect and a team environment in the game, but everybody's different. And so it's obviously like with NASCAR, kind of it's team oriented throughout the race. And it's, it seems like, I mean, the team plays a much bigger role in NASCAR than it does in golf, I think.
Yeah, I think with the, as one of the last like four or five NASCAR fans in the world, I think that one thing I've really learned is the importance of like the pit crew strategy, which I could talk on. I'm still learning more and more, but I mean, one little change in it'll throw the whole race off. And I think with golf, it's got to be a similar principle. One little, we talked about it last week, you know, in the office. One little change to your grip, one little change to your stance, it's going to throw the whole course or even the whole round off. So definitely there's a level of discipline that I think is common in both sports. So one kind of question that's tied in with that is just the overall strategy, mental preparation. You know, it might surprise you guys to know, being that I'm built like Vince Vaughn, you know, a little bit taller and bigger and just as funny, hopefully. My dad is a marathon runner. And I definitely don't get my running abilities from him, but he always talked about, you know, the night before the race, how you prepare mentally for that. And there's that old adage that runners get a pasta dinner the night before. Talk to me a little bit about preparation. I mean, you obviously want to be eating the right things and exercising and drinking correctly, but just 24 hours before a big match, walk me through what's going on mentally and physically in your mind and how the day goes, so to speak.
Nice. That's a good question. So are you thinking like just for us personally?
Yeah, at your highest level, most, okay. You know, the most critical, you know, round in front of you. You know, if, let's say it's a Friday, Saturday, somewhere in there. What are you thinking Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday?
Yeah. So I think, again, there's going to be a ton of differences between the kind of golf and the level that Paul and I play versus maybe the PGA Tour. So comparing us to that level is going to be significantly different. But for me personally, I don't say the 24 hours leading up to an event, I don't drink beer. So if I'm like, I'm playing this weekend, I put on a pod the other day talking about the Kent County Am coming up out at Kauffman, and I'm not going to be shotgunning Busch Light Friday night when I've got a 8 a.m. tee time on Saturday.
Makes sense.
Just kind of trying to do right by your body that way. And I do know guys that do play well with hangovers, but I'm just not one of those guys. And I think too, for me, that what I've embraced leading up to tournament time is a more kind of casual approach. I don't, like the day before, some people might dog me for this, but I'll skip my workout on Friday. So tomorrow I will not do the workout routine that I traditionally do. And just because I want my body to be as fresh as and rested as possible for Saturday and Sunday, especially knowing that in this particular event I've got coming up, it's 18 holes Saturday and then 36 on Sunday. And so I'm going to be gassed by the end of the weekend. So I figure the more energy and the more I can have in the tank heading into the event, the better off I am. So I'll obviously eat right. I won't say I'd like have a big pasta dinner or anything like I did back in my middle school basketball days.
I did that. I had those too.
but I am conscious of what I eat, so I'm not gonna crush half a pizza.
That's true.
I'm not gonna go to Papa Murphy's and bake my pizza and eat half of it the night before an event. So
can't do that.
Just trying to be conscious of what fuels my body the right way. But I've done a lot of research and I kind of know what works for me, and everybody's going to be different. So, I mean, Paul, do you pay attention to a lot of that stuff before you play in league on Wednesday?
Yeah, exactly. I get ready for my little Wednesday night league. No, I would say back when I was a little bit more competitive, I never really thought about, I wasn't worried the night before, a couple nights before, whether it's 24, 48 hours. All my preparation started a month, two months in advance. That's where I was always putting in the time at that point, because I figured if I'm on the range the night before and I'm searching for something, I probably am not going to be finding it in time to actually be productive for it. So that was always my thing. Nutrition wise, that wasn't as big of a thing, you know, 10, 12 years ago as it is now. But I would definitely, obviously you want to get a good night's rest, but I never do the or I never did the night before a tournament. I don't sleep that well that night, no matter what I do.
That's a great question. It kind of made me think of another one. Is that month before, you said it kind of prep begins a month before. At what point in those 4 or 5 weeks are the nerves at the worst? Is, you know, or once you step on the course for the event, is that, are you at peace, or is it, you know, 3 or 4 weeks prior where you're almost in freak out stress mode? I mean, at what point is the weight of it the heaviest, so to speak? Yeah.
To me, golf can be so up and down. Like, if you enter a tournament a month in advance, you know, you're going to go through some swings during that time frame where you're going to be playing really good golf, mm-hmm. and you're hoping to continue that, and you're going to be also times where you might be playing some terrible golf. So it's all just trying to focus on the right things to try and peak at that time for that tournament, or at least that was always my mindset. It's always easier, well, it's more difficult than you think, but that was always more or less my strategy around it.
Yeah, I think for me, kind of, I don't get nervous leading up to events. I pretty much sign up for everything right away in the spring, so I've got a pretty full calendar and pretty committed to the schedule of events I've put together. And so they just kind of, and they come up quickly. So for me, when I sign up for 2 or 3 events in June or July, they're here before I know it. And I don't really have time to think about them as kind of individual prep. I prep more for the season than for individual gotcha. Events. And so I think for me, a lot of the concept of prep work comes in January, February, March.
Yep.
And kind of getting ready and doing things that way. But the nerves don't hit me until the day of. I'll show up for an event, and usually maybe it'll make me feel a little bit during the warm-up sesh, but otherwise it's the first tee.
I was going to ask you, do you get the nerves on the driving range? I always think I'm going to go up there and just hit a terrible shot and everybody's going to look at me.
Dude, I used to back in.
That's so, like, one of my biggest fears, and it's so weird because it's never happened. I've never done that, but
I adopted this back in, so after college, when I was playing competitively at a even higher level than I do now, I used to play in the qualifier for the Buick Open, when they used to have that over at Warwick Hills. And I adopted the practice of showing up to my range session prior to the round and hitting punch shots with my pitching wedge, because I was nervous that I would chunk the first handful of shots. And so I would put that ball back in my stance and hit these little punch pitching wedges just to kind of calm the nerves. Mm-hmm. But a lot's changed since then, and I don't get nervous on the range, not anymore. I think I pretty much know that I'm going to show up with what I'm going to show up with. And to kind of piggyback on what you said about kind of the fluidity of the game and grinding it out the night before, golf is such a goofy game, Derek. It's like one of those things that I've had events like I can be hitting it really well, I can be hitting it really poorly, and I might show up and shoot 85, or I might show up and shoot 65, and every day is different. And obviously the guys on tour are dramatically different because they do work on their games much more than we do, but it's one of those, and I think that kind of takes the pressure off and the preparation. I mean, you do what you can, but you know that any given day you're going to show up and shoot whatever kind of golf puts in front of you that day. So it's, for me, that takes a lot of pressure off the game.
Yeah, that kind of leads into my next question is, it's more of a football term, so I know we're jumping all over the place, but I remember hearing about back when Andrew Luck played, I think it was Jim Harbaugh talked about how he has the best case of football amnesia. You know, he throws a bad throw, he forgets about it and moves on.
Yeah.
How would you guys rate yourselves in terms of, okay, you had a horrible swing, you had a bad shot, you had a bad hole. I mean, how do you get over that? Are you able to just move on, or is it easier said than done?
Like ranking 1 to 10, is that what you're like?
I don't know. You can answer however you want to answer it. You have a bad shot. How do you move on?
So I'm going to speak for myself on this. The younger you are, the easier it is sometimes to forget some of that stuff. So like in high school, Garrett and I have talked about this off the pod quite a bit, but I used to kind of be a putter that, like, if I had a 5-foot putt, I would hit it like 10 feet. I was a rammer. Like, I would just go at it, take all the break, no fear. And that can work really well. That can also be really, really bad. And, you know, when I was younger, I didn't mind having that 5 or 6 foot putt coming back. But now I hate that 5 or 6 foot putt. So I kind of dye things in a little bit. And that kind of goes with what you're trying to ask. Like, I have a hard time forgetting some of those demons. Like, if early on in a round I miss a 3-foot putt and it's because I pushed a putt or pulled a putt, or whether or not it's a shot or whatever, it's tough to get out of your mind. Like last night I played in league and I pulled a wedge. I was 125 yards and it was an easy shot and I yanked it into the water. I haven't done that in years. And then on the next hole, I did the same thing somehow, somehow, some way. And that's usually like 125 is like my go-to distance. I love that distance and I'm usually can be within 10 or 15 feet. And it just now, like the older I get, that stuff sticks in my head. When I was younger, you could push it out pretty easily, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to keep my answer short and sweet because I don't prefer to talk about inner demons 2 days prior to an event. Derek.
Sorry.
I didn't think of that.
But yeah, thanks, guys. So I'll let Paul's answer kind of field most of that. But I will say that there are certain things that are easier to forget than others. And for me, mentally, in my mind, I don't hold on to bad shots, but my body physically has a tendency to do it. And Paul got to witness that firsthand in the Mitten Golf Tour event we played in a couple weekends ago, because we started on 10 and I hit a lot of good tee shots for me throughout the back nine. And then we made the turn and it was hole four, a par five. I leaked a drive out to the right, and from that point forward, every tee shot I hit was blown 30, 40 yards right. And so even though I wasn't consciously worried about it or thinking about it, my body just responds to that kind of subconscious fear. So
it was funny because on number one, you tried to hit a fade.
Uh-huh.
And I said something to you after you hit that. I was like, did you really try and do that? And you're like, yep, I totally did. And then we got to four and it just was like ingrained almost. Like you're totally right.
All of a sudden.
And then everything was right.
Yeah. And yeah, it was right. Not correct. It was definitely too far right.
Yeah.
Directionally right. So that's one of those things, Derek. For me, it's not conscious. It's more subconscious. But short answer there, because I've got a lot of good golf to play over this weekend. So I don't want to miss right.
All right. One more question. Then I got a little fast fire yes no thing going on.
All
so
right.
Just one more quick question though. I want the listeners to understand just how kind of clueless I am. I remember close to a year ago probably when I was over hearing you guys talk about golf, and my mind was just blown at the concept that there are people that change where the hole is on the greens. You know, they cut a new.
Oh,
I had no clue. I the idea of cutting a new hole for the greens was, and I'm probably butchering how it's even actually talked about, but just blew my mind. I was like, why would you want to do that? Doesn't that go against maintaining a course? You're cutting holes all over the greens. So, at any rate, between fairway, greens, and any other, you know, sand traps, the water hazard, what are some of the most sensitive areas of the course in terms of needs upkeep is needed? You know, fast greens, slow greens, you know, I always hear these terms, but what are some of the most important parts of a golf course that need to be maintained, that, and if you don't maintain them, makes a huge difference?
I think that's a great question. It's kind of cool that you're bringing that up, because I just did a quick podcast and course review of Kaufman, and one of the things that I spoke very highly of is the superintendent and the way he maintains the property. And Paul and I both, I think, have a good background in golf course kind of maintenance and the superintendent practice. But for me, as far as what I look for and what kind of requires the most attention and needs to be most delicately maintained is the greens. And not just from an ergonomic standpoint and making sure that you've got healthy turf and everything's in good shape, but that's what's going to make or break people in the round of golf. At least me and a lot of the people I know, if you show up to a golf course and you're putting on bad greens, poorly maintained putting surfaces, you're not going to come back. Because that's where, if you play golf to shoot a score and to play well, how the greens are putting is going to make or break that round. I know, because like, a necessary evil of golf course maintenance is aerification, where we take the aerifier across the greens and you punch all the holes in it, and then you got to fill them with sand, and for the next week to 2 weeks, depending on weather, the greens are bumpy as all get out. And it's like, we always joke, it's like I will not play golf for probably 2 weeks after a course gets aerified, because just don't like putting on bumpy greens.
And so I think those are that's the area. And it does require a lot of maintenance. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. And so you're kind of funny about your observation of cutting cups, because it's a very delicate practice, and you can totally botch it. And you can, if you move the cup and cut it poorly, I mean, you can, yeah. I mean, it influences the putting surface for days or weeks to come, depending on how you've done it. And so there's a bit of art to it. And that's my thought. What about you, Paul?
So I got a lot of thoughts on this, so I'll try and keep it pretty brief. But I mentioned previously, I come from a golf background, so my brother and my dad are both superintendents. So I know a lot about the grounds keeping of courses, and I've worked at quite a few courses in the past doing that. Greens is by far the most important, in my opinion. Whether you like it fast and firm or however you want it done. Yeah. Different courses, yeah. Some are receptive, some are a little bit slower. They need to be smooth. And that's easier said than done, mm-hmm. to be honest. But I also look at tees, and I think that this might be a little bit underrated, but there are a couple spots that every person that plays is always going to be on. They're always going to be on a tee. Mm-hmm. So make sure you got flat ground there. Make sure the tee markers actually line up to the hole, because sometimes you'll be interested to see that some courses just don't do that. And it's really strange. It sets you up weird. And then obviously everybody's on a green.
Yeah.
So I think those are very important. But I look at other like little details, like, you know, sprinkler heads, are those edged a little bit? You know, have they picked up track? Like just little things like that. That kind of dive into the experience of it. But for sure, greens is the number one. Tees, I would say, is probably, you know, up there. It's just kind of like a little picky thing. Make sure it's on level.
Yeah. Never thought of that.
That's true. And you'll see Derek, if we get out and play next week, like we're hoping to. there is, I mean, you joke about a couple of courses. We won't mention them on the podcast because I want to review those together later. But you'll notice that there is a lot that goes into what makes a golf course kind of better than another golf course. Mm-hmm. And maintenance is where that's at. Because like Paul said, it's edge and sprinkler heads. It's in the details. It's not just about having good turf and maintaining how green a golf course is, but there's a lot to be said about, like Paul mentioned, just nice tee markers that are all aligned properly, and edging the sprinkler heads or
bunkers, your bunkers.
Edging bunkers. If you get on a course and your bunkers are in rough shape, I mean, you'll notice. And it's so when you play a high level, kind of a high caliber golf course, it's all the attention to detail that goes into it. And I know I used to want to be a superintendent when I was in the golf industry and working maintenance. I had intended on pursuing that career path, and I love the attention to detail and the amount of kind of art and creativity that goes into maintaining and keeping a golf course in good shape. So, yeah. But there's a lot to it. That could be an entire podcast
I'll bet
in
it could.
Itself.
For sure.
And so wrapping up here real quick, that's all been helpful to learn. We're kind of in the final lap, if you want to punny.
The final lap. It's funny that you're doing this real quick, because I listened to another podcast out there, the Team TaylorMade podcast, and they do speed injected questions at the end. So they have rapid fire,
man.
Just quick and just go.
Run and gun, rip it and grip it.
Rip it and rip it, whatever. Yeah.
How we're going to do this is you can answer yes, no, or you can give like a quick explanation. And I want Paul to go first, and I want Garrett to go second. Okay. So we've got seven total.
There's a format here.
Are XPC golf clubs a good brand?
I've never heard of them.
I've also never heard of them, except for you.
happens to be what Vijay Singh here uses, so we'll count that
as a no.
Okay, I'll
just give us a quick, tell us about your clubs, Vince Vaughn. Give us a quick
note. My clubs are, when I was...
What does XPC stand for?
I don't know. Extra Precious Club, something like that. I don't know. When I was in junior high school, that's just what I had. I think my dad actually knew somebody who made them custom, and those were
custom
allegedly what custom height.
They're fitted.
You know, for those that don't know how tall Vince Vaughn is, I'm about the same height, 6'5", give or take. And so I'm pretty sure I have junior high or golf club, so that's probably why I don't ever play very well. But I was just curious. Yeah, it sounds like they're a great brand, and I'm lucky to have them.
Before you get to your next question, quick disclaimer here. If you are a listener and you do play XPCs, the most important thing, Derek, about clubs, regardless of brand, is that you are comfortable hitting them. So if they're XPCs or Paul, if they're Nikes or me, if they're TaylorMade, it's all about what fits the golfer best. And that's not just length and loft and all the specs, but what looks good behind the ball to you. And so gotcha. If XPC is what does it, man, then mad props to you. Play those XPCs.
All right, another question. Ball washing stations, are they effective?
Make a difference? I've never used one.
You see them everywhere. Gary, I'll let you answer. I see them everywhere. I'm always like, okay, unless you have mud on them, are they important to the game of golf?
I think, personally, I mean, Paul, you've never used one. All right. I think they're gimmicky. They're there. I think at a higher level, like I play golf and I always keep one end of my towel. I always have a towel on my bag and I always keep one end moist. And so it is important to have a clean golf ball, but I don't use a ball washer. I'll just, if my towel is dry, I'll spit on it.
That's what I do too. That's exactly. I probably have used a ball washer before, but I just don't go out of my way.
Three dunks up and down isn't the magic number.
Well, half the time they're empty, aren't right? they? Like, so you go over there and try and clean off your golf ball, and there's no water in there, so why even waste the steps walking over there? Just spit in your towel.
But if you're a superstitious guy and three dunks and dry is what does it for you again, but a ball washer is just an aesthetically pleasing way to place a trash can next to a tee box.
I like that.
Which is also important.
It makes sense. I always find it interesting, golf gloves. I'm right-handed. I wear one on my left hand. I don't understand it. But are golf gloves generally helpful?
Yes. Especially right now. Here, it's 90-plus degrees.
But why one hand?
I couldn't even imagine playing without a glove right now. Because if you're righty, your left hand is the lead hand. That's okay. The most dominant hand, I would say, in the golf swing.
It's a grip thing is what you're
saying. It's a grip thing, okay. Yeah. So, like, your left hand is covering more of the club than your right hand, for sure.
Garrett, you all sign?
Yeah, I do. I agree with that 100%. It's a great question to ask, and some guys do wear two gloves. I've never done that, but...
Who's the guy on tour?
Tommy Two Gloves Gainer. Shout out to him. He's bounced around the tour, and he's made two gloves work for him, but I agree. It's I've always used a glove, and so if I don't, it's just kind of become one of those things that feels weird and uncomfortable. Yeah. And for me, it's left hand for the exact reason Paul said. The left hand is the control hand. That's what's going to kind of dominate the club face and the swing. The right hand is kind of along for the ride and to apply a little bit of power, but the left hand is where the control's at. So I think that glove gives you that extra grip, a little extra
power,
a little extra everything.
Awesome. I was going to ask a question. My golf glove brand is FootJoy, and I don't know why you would name a glove brand about feet, but we'll leave that question for another day. Tee time etiquette. How serious is it? I know it's not yes or no, but like, is there a rhyme or like, do you have to show up 30 minutes before your tee time? Talk to me a little bit about, I've heard bits and pieces. So again, short, fast, rapid fire.
There is etiquette depending on where you play. So I would say for tournament etiquette for you, you're going to be there 45 minutes, hour and a half early, depending on what your setup's like. For me, going to play in a league on Wednesday night, I'm a trunk slammer now. Get my clubs out, throw them on the cart, and go. Like, I'm there on, literally, if my tee time is 6:10, I'm there at 6:08, so that I have 2 minutes to be able to pay and hop in the cart and
busy grab lifestyle. A few drinks. You got
that's
kids, man.
Literally it for me.
I think that
that's bad etiquette.
I mean, it's not bad etiquette unless it... See, this is where I think tee time etiquette is important, and I think it's important for the group behind you more than the group that you're playing with. Because I do play with guys that are like Paul. They go straight from the car to the first tee, and that's fine. If you have a 6:10 tee time and you show up at 6:05, it doesn't bother me. But as long as you're not the guy that has a 6:10 tee time and rolls up at 6:10.
Yeah.
Like, I used to play with a guy that when I made a tee time for, say, 9:15 in the morning, he'd pull into the parking lot at 9:15 in the morning. And that always makes it uncomfortable because tee times are spaced 8 to 10 minutes apart, depending on the course and how they do it. So you're disrupting not only the group you're playing with, but you're disrupting the group behind you, which is going to subsequently disrupt the entire flow of the day, potentially. So there's a lot that goes into it.
Hmm.
So tee time etiquette, get there 10 minutes early at least.
Unless there's something, you know.
Oh, I agree. You're right. I just don't do it anymore.
All right, this one should be a little bit quicker. I was going to ask, you know, picture recreational round of golf. You're not going to take it super seriously if that's possible. What beer or drink or beverage is your go-to? Best beer, best beverage. You're just out having fun.
I usually do a mixed drink of some sort.
That works.
That's usually like a vodka and soda or something like that is usually what I go to.
It's not LaCroix.
It's not the easiest thing to do, but I guess if I was going to have a beer on the course, I would probably do a Bud Light or Miller Lite, I guess. I don't drink that much on the course, really, so that's a tough one for me to even answer. I just don't.
I mean, it's probably more so you want to actually play well.
Yeah, I've never mixed the two together. It just hasn't been me. I have a lot of friends who enjoy it, and they have a great time, and I have nothing against it. I just choose not to for whatever reason.
Yeah, I agree. I can't remember the last time I drank while playing golf, so if we do that next week, it'll be fun. No doubt about it. But I used to, like, when I play in golf outings and like scrambles and stuff like this, I played in a good number of those down in North Carolina, and I used to exclusively, that's back in my kind of, I call them nerdy days, but I would exclusively drink Michelob. It's the official beer of the PGA Tour.
Why not?
And then I got razzed because the guys I was playing with would call it Chickalobe. They're like, what are you doing, man? It's like low-calorie, light beer. It's like, that's for the ladies. Like, where's your man beer? So I got razzed a little bit for that. So, but I'm with Paul. I think if I were to be casually out and we do this next week, it's going to be probably a Miller or a Coors.
Nice.
Just something light to hang out and have fun. And
you don't want anything too heavy.
Something cool, crisp, and refreshing.
Awesome. Next question is very similar. Best snack mid round. What's your go to? I'm guessing Paul's are sunflower seeds, but please enlighten me.
Snack? I'm bad. Like, I don't really eat that much out on the golf course. So my favorite thing probably at the turn is usually get a hot dog and chips, and that's probably not a good thing to have when you're golfing.
Sounds good.
But I always want something somewhat light but filling enough that I'm not still hungry.
Yeah.
I should do, like, I'm really bad with that. You should eat more on the course than I do. You should drink more water on the course than I do. It was never a thing for me.
Garrett?
Yeah, I used to be the guy back in high school and college. I would not eat or drink on the golf course because I always was superstitious about it. I felt like it would disrupt the way my body was functioning, even though I was probably disrupting my function more by not eating and drinking.
Yep. Huh.
A lot of stuff you kind of read and what I've learned over the years is it's good to have multiple snacks in your bag because getting some nutrition, something in your body every 3 to 4 holes is just to help sustain that energy level and keep you fueled because you're out there, like this weekend, I'm going to be out there for 5 hours plus, I guarantee it. And it's going to be hot as blazes. And so if you're not eating and drinking, you're giving strokes away. I mean, you're just letting other people beat you by not keeping yourself nourished. But for me, I keep usually a couple packages of almonds.
Yeah.
I don't eat heavy, so it's something that I can just put a good top right corner tear on and dump a few almonds in my mouth, and that keeps me sustained. But it's important to stay hydrated too.
Awesome. Half the reason is I'm planning, because if we do go golfing next week, I'm a huge fan of cargo shorts. So on one side of the cargo shorts are going to be Bud Lights. The other side is going to be probably trail mix of some sort. So that's my game plan, at least. It's going to be my secret. Those and my XPCs are going to be my secret. So last question I got for you guys is, again, quick answers. For a beginner like me, if I want to get out and get practicing or just have fun with friends, what's the best course in West Michigan to just go play for a beginner?
Wow, that's a quick question. That's a good question, and that's a tough one to answer quickly. What do you think, Paul? You have any?
I don't
know. It's always been, if you were a beginner and you want to go have fun, I would find a course that is inexpensive and go and play at that. Because there's nothing, I mean, you're not going to want to go pay 50, 60, 70 bucks to go play golf and get beat up.
Yeah.
If you can find a course that's going to charge you 15 bucks, 20 bucks, something like that, where you can hit the ball around a little bit, that's what I would do it. That would be my initial reaction. And there's a few courses around here that are that way. But I would do something really easy. If you could find, like, even a par three course of some sort, like an executive course, I think that would be the way to go.
What about like miniature golf? Just kidding, Garrett.
I haven't played a good round of putt-putt in a while, but I think to... That's you're hitting the nail on the head, Paul. By you want to have a low cost, kind of low stress experience. So you don't want to get out there and spend $50 on a round of golf or nine holes with a cart, and then play a course that's difficult. Because as a beginner, you want to play a course that's probably pretty flat and pretty forgiving. You want to be able to hit the ball around. And so if I were to recommend, these are a little outside of the Grand Rapids area, but if you went towards the lakeshore to a place like I've talked about Moss Ridge on a previous podcast, Moss Ridge is a great one. There's Fruitport Golf Club and Terra Verde out there in Nunica, which is good. You can go a little further south down the lakeshore to West Ottawa Golf Club, or kind of in the Muskegon area is a course called Oak Ridge. Those are all very, very cost effective and friendly golf courses. They're great places to show up in your cargo shorts and bring your snacks and your Bud Light and have a good time with your friends. And so I still play those courses at least a couple times a year, because not every round of golf has to be business.
Maybe if we get out next week, we could race some golf carts. You guys think that'd be a good idea?
You know how to tee them up?
I think so.
Then if you don't, then
I'm gonna win. I'll have to check with my sponsors on that one.
Gas carts, if you tee them up, man, no governor.
That's
no,
true.
No governor, no rules.
It's my kind of racing right there.
Yep, so we can race, but I'll race you to the course.
That'll work. I don't know how fast.
Let's be safe, guys.
Let's get there and get back so we can record another podcast together.
That's right, man. I've learned a lot. I mean, I'm sure there are more similarities between NASCAR and golf, but I mean, they're very unique sports for sure. I mean, this probably is the only podcast that ever compared the two. I just appreciate the time. It's great to learn a little bit more about the preparation and everything included with it. So
So after hearing us talk about it, which one is more of a sport than the other?
NASCAR. That's difficult. Because there's a couple schools of thought. I've heard the school of thought that if it doesn't involve a ball, it's not a sport. I've heard that argument, and I do understand it. But man, I see when you see the off season of NASCAR and the physical training and the mental training to drive a race car 200 miles per hour. And in some cases you're bumping in and pushing the car ahead of you and not losing control. I mean, it takes a lot of muscle and a lot of strength to control that vehicle at that speed. And I'll say they're equal, man. They're both sports. They both take an insane amount of physical training and an insane amount of mental training. They're very, very different. But you know what? I do challenge people to give NASCAR a try. We need more than just the five remaining fans here in the country, it seems. But both take, you know, 2-3 hours out of your day to watch, at least, I'm guessing. It could be an all-day event. I will say, I mean, to an outsider, they might find golf boring, just like watching a car making a lap boring. You know, I could totally see that. I think that's just the beauty of having the options. I mean, I would say it's difficult to get into NASCAR because you can't go racing on the highway in your city, but I suppose you could, but it'd be illegal. I'd say they're both vastly different, but man, I will absolutely say they're both sports. Fair enough.
I have kind of a weak answer, but
it's political. Maybe I don't know.
I without driving this podcast too much deeper into the NASCAR world, I will agree with Derek to some extent, Paul. I think the sport is more or less determined by kind of an athletic endeavor that's entertaining to the people that want to watch. And so whether that's NASCAR, whether that's golf, I mean, they're going to draw very different crowds, and unless you're Derek and you've got your XPCs in the garage or in the trunk of your Mercury Mariner and you're heading to the golf course,
it's a fast car.
But I think they both have different athletic
and mental
levels of performance, and so you're fine. I'd say they're comparable.
Well, if I ever start a NASCAR podcast, I'll definitely be sure to invite you guys.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to change this to the Michigan multi-sport podcast. I think we've touched on golf, we've touched on NASCAR, football. I mean, Did we miss anything?
I think we're good, man.
America's pastime. You have any baseball questions? For
I might be able to come up with some, but maybe I'll save that for another episode.
Yeah, maybe part.
If I'm allowed back,
maybe part two. I think this is entertaining. I think the listeners will appreciate it. But if you did, hit me up on Instagram at gsmithgolf. If you didn't, also hit me up on Instagram at gsmithgolf, because I like to let the listeners drive the content a little bit. And if you guys want to have Derek back on, we might keep a seat at the table for him, but we'll see. We'll let the listeners decide. I'll let you know how the vote goes.
Any feedback is good feedback.
But we're doing it live, so Paul, thanks again for jumping on with us.
Anytime.
It was fun. Derek, always a pleasure. I think you'll be back. So now that we've talked so much about playing golf with you next week, we're going to have to come back for a recap of our 9 holes of golf together next week. So
I think we'll have to. All I know is I'm going to be quite handicapped, for sure. Keep that in mind.
We'll keep that in mind. But thanks for tuning in, guys. Until next time, hopefully you guys enjoy the NASCAR golf content, and we'll catch up with you again early next week for kind of a recap of the Kent County AM, and obviously we'll maybe bring Derek back, but we'll see how that goes. So thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch up with you guys next week.